This month, I'm reporting back from the Genetic Society Autumn Meeting, which took place at the Royal Society in London. Called Genes to Shape, the talks brought together researchers ranging from mathematicians and physicists to developmental biologists to discuss how biological shapes are created. To hear more about the idea behind the meeting, and for his summary of the proceedings, I spoke to one of the co-organisers, Professor Buzbaum from UCL, whose own lab works on cell shape and movement.
I think since DNA was discovered and the genome sequence, there's really been a lot of emphasis on the gene level and how genes control things. And as we know, that's important because you take identical twins, they look very similar as embryos, as young adults, and as people, and old people even. So genes, if you have an identical gene, you really do have identical phenotype in animals. In plants, obviously, very different. But so genes have a big influence. But I think in a way, the path from gene, which is information, to form, to shape, to us, is a very complicated, long journey where lots of interesting things happen. I think what's happened in the community and what this meeting was about is that, in a way, trying to understand as you cross the scales from the small bits of information that is in the, you know, is ATGs and Cs, the tiny code in the middle of a cell, how that is translated into these amazing large objects, beautifully formed flowers and things, which we see in the macroscopic world. And it's very complicated. And to understand those processes, you can't just do the conventional kind of science that biologists are taught. You can't just take genes and remove them and see, you know, you can see what goes wrong. But to understand the process, how you get from small to big, growth, for example, and cell shape changes, you really need to start using tools from the physical sciences, which is why we have so many theorists here and physicists who are using logical, simple models formulated very simply, and then simulations and mathematics to try to see when you put simple elements together what you get out.
And what I found was really interesting is I've been to a lot of genetics meetings where, like you say, people, they look at one gene that's faulty and they find, you know, you have a smaller mouse or a bigger dog or something like that. This was going right down to the molecular level, the cellular level. What for you really struck you about some of the talks today?
Well, to me, the first talk was the brilliant choice of first talk. So I'm very glad I enjoyed Andreas because he's brilliant. Was really showing how if you take a thing we understand well, you take machines which regulate cell shape, actin and myosin, two machines. We know exactly what they do. They've been studied for decades. We know exactly the molecular behavior, the physical parameters about them. You put them together and you change the amount of filaments. You get behaviors that are extraordinary and people, Andreas doesn't understand how they arise, these beautiful things. And it shows that, you know, simple rules can generate fabulous kind of behaviors. In a way, in biology, how can you reconcile these self-organizing things that you happen in tornadoes, like we heard about, there's one in the Philippines this week, devastating, it's self-organizing wind system. We see that's in a bit what is happening in the actin filaments. But biology, as I said, you have a genome and two identical twins are identical. So biology is a lot about how the genome is taming and using self-organization. And so to me, that's a theme that runs across this tension between genes and self-organization. The Mendel Prize winner, Stan Liebler, he comes from physics and he just looks at the essence of things and looking at things like hereditary and non-hereditary factors in determining organism behavior and population, ecological behavior, you know, really new ways of thinking about complexity in life science and how much of it is just direct control, like computer programs, which is often where we used to think, versus self-organization. And the mixture between the two is where I think life arises, which is sort of, I think, is why the meeting was very alive, in fact, for that reason.
What for you was the one thing that stood out that made you go, wow, that's fascinating, or that's weird?
Well, when I heard about molecular biology, which I work in, and single gene research, you never get a wow factor because it doesn't mean anything. You find a gene that regulates even cancer. So what? Why that gene? What does it matter? You know. But a lot of the biology here in this meeting is inspired by what is inspiring about nature. You look at it and the forms are beautiful, the dynamics are almost inexplicable, and trying to tease apart those life processes in all these different talks. I think almost every talk did that. That's why we chose these people, because I think that's, this is biology. And I think that's what's so, what would that, you know, all of it's amazing. I mean, life is amazing. You look at a hand or a leaf or a seed or anything, it's all pretty wow. That's why I'm a scientist. In the UK at the moment, you know, the public are interested in science, and it's because it is wondrous, and I think people don't feel as excluded. And I think in the audience too, we don't feel as excluded now. Physicists are not excluding from biology, and biologists are not excluding from using modelling. And I think it's a nice time where we can all go, wow, and then also stop and try to understand how things work, which is hard, but that's what's fun. It's not demystifying, I think. It doesn't take the magic out of the stars to understand them, and it doesn't take the magic out of development. We don't have to worry about demystifying nature. We will never understand it, but we can get close, and I enjoy that. I think the meeting showed a lot of people getting close, but also showing what is not known was also clear in many talks. It was great.
We heard talks ranging from the shape of snapdragons to tiny molecules moving around to the inner ear of zebrafish, yeah. All sorts of things. What would be your take-home message from this meeting?
I mean, in a way, you know, it's partly we've invited people we like to hear and people we like to be up to date with, and I think a lot of the research is exemplifies what I think is good science. And I think there's not all science is good. There's a lot of bad science, I would say. I mean, because it's hard. It's hard to do it well. And I think it's a bit of a lesson for me, is a lot of these talks are lessons how to do science, how to define a problem well, to set up an experimental system where it's tractable, dig deeper and understand more. And it can take 20 years, but you've got ways to really make progress. We should all, you know, not sit down with a problem that we've been told to study. We should think about what's important, about what's interesting in life, and what we think is a fascinating problem. If we're going to spend our time and night and day thinking about things, we should choose something we think is a deep, important problem, a beautiful problem, and think about what's the best way to do it. Not go to our, you know, catalogue and order what's easy to order, but think hard about, let's find a tractable way to address a beautiful, interesting problem.
That was Professor Buzz Baum from UCL. Congratulations to the winner of this year's Genetic Society Mendel Medal, Professor Stan Liebler, whose fascinating presentation about making mathematical models of complex biological systems we heard mentioned there. In his talk, he described how he and his team are taking small model ecosystems made up of bacteria, algae and single-celled animals, tracking them as they evolve and trying to construct mathematical models that describe them. His work is helping to shed light on the processes and rules that underpin evolution, just as the medal's namesake, Mendel, did back in the 19th century.